In today's first reading, St. Paul is correcting the Corinthians for the disorders in their gatherings, what we would call it nowadays, we would call liturgical abuses. And one of the lines that he says to them stood out for me. In eating, each one goes ahead with his own supper. Sorry, this line. It is not to eat the Lord's supper, for in eating, each one goes ahead with his own supper. So this contrast between the Lord's supper and the human supper. And the reason I think that stood out for me is because it reminded me of a line, one of the key lines in yesterday's gospel, where Jesus corrects Peter, saying, you're not thinking like God does, but like human beings do. So this contrast, God's ways, human ways, God's thinking, God's supper, human supper. It's not to mean that human ways are bad. Sometimes we are bad because we're fallen, but that God's ways are certainly higher than man's ways. And that's where my thoughts go here. So let's go back to that gospel yesterday. Remember, Jesus said, who do you say that I am? At first, he got the human answer. You know, you're John the Baptist or you're Jeremiah or someone. And then he got the divine answer. You're the Messiah. Peter was inspired to give that answer. He didn't get it on his own. So again, human and then divine. And then when Jesus says, well, don't tell anybody. Why? Because everyone will interpret it in a human way. When you say, well, here's the Messiah, their idea of the Messiah, the human understanding of the Messiah, will get in the way of the divine reality of the Messiah. And that's, so he says, don't tell anyone. Let me tell you first what Messiah means from God's perspective. And so he starts to explain the Messiah is going to suffer and die and rise again. That's God's thinking. Peter steps up with human thinking and says, no, he rebukes Jesus for that. I'd love to listen to what that conversation was like. Rebuking Jesus. And remember, Jesus turns to him and says, get behind me, Satan. You are not thinking as God does, but as human beings do. Okay, so that's the contrast that I think we can work with as we reflect on these readings today. In the first reading, Paul is trying to lift up the Corinthians to a higher level because they are living at a natural level. Not that it's a bad thing to eat supper. He says, don't you have your own houses where you can eat and drink, eat at home. Apparently, they were bringing food to the place where they were gathering as a church, which was probably somebody's home because they didn't have churches, but they were gathering in someone's house, and or maybe the wealthy owner of a big house was having food for his friends, and the people who were not of that social class, well, they didn't get anything, or they didn't bring anything. And Paul says, you think this is praiseworthy? You think this is good? You're doing more harm than good in this human way of doing things. And you're not here to eat the Lord's Supper. You're not even understanding what you're doing in the Lord's Supper. Don't you know what was handed on? And then he gives the very first instruction in the whole Bible, or first written instruction on what the Lord's Supper was, the eating of the body and drinking of the blood of Christ. Now, we who are here, now it's Monday morning, no one comes to a Mass on Monday morning if he's looking for something to eat. So I think you're here for the Lord's Supper. On Thursday, we're going to have a healing Mass and there's refreshments afterwards. I saw the brochure. It's possible someone could come for the refreshments, I suppose, but I don't think so. I think most people who come to Mass, they don't expect to feast on human food. They expect the Lord's Supper. So that's not so difficult a distinction to make for us. In the world, it's a very strange thing that's happened in the world. When God has been eliminated in the mind of many people, as if he either doesn't exist or he's not very important, now the question has come up about whether there's a distinction between the human being and the animals. Backwards, like, are human beings just highly developed animals and nothing more. A lot of people think that. So here St. Paul is trying to get us to think the distinction between divine ways and human ways. We're still trying to figure out the difference between human ways and animal ways. And sometimes in our fallen condition, we do act more like animals than like human beings. Okay, so that's how bad that contrast can become. But the point here is don't block God's ways by clinging to human ways. Don't let your eating your supper and having your social time together get in the way of your communion with God and your communion together in God. That's the Lord's Supper. That supper, which is not simply a social gathering, it is that because God is drawing us all together, but it's more a proclamation of the death of the Lord until he comes. A proclamation of the sacrifice of the Messiah is what very thing Jesus told the apostles in yesterday's gospel, until he comes again. So it's the celebration that we have here, and we reflected on this in our retreat over the weekend, is much more than what we think. It's actually the greatness of what God is doing and God is making available to us, and we're participating in God's work here. And that's a privilege that we have until he comes again. In the gospel, we have this story of the centurion. And the centurion is just an extraordinary witness of transcending human thinking to get to divine thinking, or transcending natural ways and living according to faith. It's really remarkable, and Jesus himself is amazed at the faith of this centurion. He even says, "Not even in Israel have I found such faith." So what's remarkable about this centurion? First of all, that he has this concern for his slave in the first place. It starts out saying he had a slave who was ill and about to die, and he was valuable to him. They say, you know, good property, you don't want to lose your property. That's the way it sounds to us. I don't know if it sounds that way in the original Greek, but it sounds like, you know, slaves are valuable and you don't want to lose them because then you have to get another one. It's like sometimes the people with their pets, you know, well, I don't want this one to die. I treasure him so much, but if he dies, I'll just get another one. Well, that's not what he was thinking. He was willing to humble himself, to present his need to Jesus, and not only to humble himself to present his need to Jesus, but to humble himself even more and say, well, let other people bring my case to Jesus. So the man's faith that Jesus can actually do something for this treasured slave, beloved slave, maybe a better word, and that he believes that Jesus can do something, and he's willing to let other people take his case to Jesus. The combination of faith and humility is just remarkable. And the elders of the Jews, whom this centurion sends, they say, he deserves to have you do this for him, for he loves our nation and he built the synagogue for us. Well, that's a combination of human thinking and divine thinking. In other words, they seem to think Jesus can do it too. I mean, he's a healer, so maybe he can heal. But they're thinking you heal the ones who deserve it. So that's human thinking. Like, you know, God will favor you if you're a good person, and if you're not a good person, then you don't get it. That's not the way God thinks. So deserving is not the criterion, but that's the way the elders of the Jews are thinking. Then the beauty of the centurion's thinking comes out as Jesus approaches the house and he sends more people and says, no, just say the word. And this is what I love about the centurion. He applies what he knows about human ways and he uses that as a way to understand divine ways. It's grace building on nature. He understands military authority, the chain of command. So he's a humble man, but he's not humble in the way we sometimes distort humility to being, oh, I'm just a nobody and I can't do anything. No, this man's a centurion. He knows that he's in charge. And when he tells someone what to do, he does it. So that doesn't sound like humility to the modern distorted way. And the distortion of humility, you can't tell anybody anything because you're nobody and you know no one will pay attention to you. That's not what the centurion thinks about himself. He knows he's in charge of 100 men or some... That's the typical definition. He's in charge of 100 men. And when he gives a command, he expects it to happen. And he's used to it. That's the way it works. When I say go, he goes. That's human thinking. And it's not. There's nothing wrong with that. That's the way authority works, especially in the military. But the great thing is he uses that natural knowledge to get an understanding of how God works. Well, if I can do that, if I say go and he goes, well, God can say go and he could say let it be and it happens. And then he applies the divine pattern to Jesus. This is extraordinary faith. Jesus has the power to say go to a sickness and the sickness will go. That's faith. So what we have here is a man of the world, a man in the military, a man of human authority, a man on a natural level who can take, by faith and by humility, take the step to transcend what he knows and live by faith. And that's the example that's given to us. So we were told yesterday, or we were warned yesterday, not to think only as human beings think, but to think as God thinks. Otherwise, we might get the rebuke that Peter got, get behind me, Satan. Here, Jesus rebukes Peter, but he praises the centurion. And this is the instruction for us. Be like this centurion. Have this kind of humility to let God be in charge and to trust that he will do what's good. And have this kind of faith to know that faith, that God can do these things and he will do them. And we're not worthy that he enter under our roof. All he has to do is say the word. Now, Paul's correction was especially directed to the celebration of the Lord's Supper, which we call the Mass. And we say in every Mass the words of the centurion. I'm not worthy that you should enter under my roof. I'm not worthy to receive the body and blood of the Lord in Holy Communion. I'm not worthy, but I'm still going to do it because I'm putting my trust in you. So it's not humility to say I'm unworthy, so I'll never receive. No, humility is to say, Lord, you be in charge. I'm not worthy, but I'm entrusting myself to you, and I will receive because you want to give yourself to me, and I want what you want. Faith and humility. So let's take that. That lesson into our own experience of this Mass, this celebration of the Lord's Supper.